Thank y'all. The marathon continue. Victory lap tonight, though.
Victory lap tonight.
Welcome to the One Talk Podcast with Ryan McCarthy.
The marathon continues, that's what you were saying.
Today's episode is sponsored by TNC Metal Roofing. TNC Metal Roofing is a small family-owned business constantly striving to outdo competition on quality, appearance, and providing the most cost-effective roofing solutions. All aspects of metal roofing, from new roofs, re-roofs, fascia, and gutter-to-wall cladding. With many builders and private clientele, they are slowly growing to be the next big contender in North Brisbane. TNC stated they are loving the work One Talk does throughout the community and beyond, highlighting mental health is a major thing and often swept under the rug within the building industry, and they want to make it a topic. Never any project TNC will shy away from, and the mental health of their employees is always at the forefront. So check the link in this bio. You can find their website. You can find their Instagram. Please go show the love. Go show the support. Also, if you need any roofing work done, I highly recommend hitting them up. They are the best in the business on Brisbane, and I highly recommend checking them out.
Welcome to the One Talk Podcast. Tamara, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be here. Christmas vibes.
Yeah.
Excited to share a little bit about my story. So thank you for having me.
No worries at all. Thanks for coming on. I was mentioned to you before the podcast that yourself and, you know, I've seen you around spaces online, around people that I know for a couple of years now. So it's actually cool to meet with you in person and connect and, you know, have this conversation.
Divine timing, you know, and yeah. I think the same with, you know, when I've been seeing all of your stuff too, you know, it's nice to know everything that you're doing with everything online and, you know, your message that you're bringing out. So it's really cool to be here now with you.
Yeah. And especially the day after of you wrapping up as well, coming on the podcast.
Holy shit.
Yeah, what a year it must have been for yourself.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. It's been definitely one of those years where you're like, how the fuck did we survive? Yeah. But in a good way, because I think so much growth happened and we just didn't stop, you know. We just had such a big... I think for us, it's like we just wanted to really do everything we can for everything we're wanting to, you know, achieve in our life. And my partner and I, you know, we work together in the business. And yeah, just to wrap up yesterday, we're like, shit, we're feeling really good.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice feeling.
Because someone like yourself, like, I get the impression that you're someone that likes to self-reflect and reflect on life. But living a busy life and having a productive schedule, I guess, how do you find the time to reflect when you're constantly moving forward?
Yeah, it's such a big, it's really interesting you bring this up, because one of the intentional things I was saying to my partner was we really need to take some time to go, wow, look at what we've done. And you're very right. The high achieving in me is kind of like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? But I feel like when you're thinking more about, you know, the person you're wanting to become and, you know, reflecting back last year to this year, you do need to have that moment just to go and breathe. Yeah. And sometimes when I don't get the chance to do that, I feel like I don't get to reset or recharge. Mm. So I think the biggest thing for us to really do this is just being more aware. And it's moments when we're driving in the car or when we're looking at our two fur babies and we're like, you know, this is important, you know. And even with everything that's happening in the world right now, you know, you can have, you know, a fight with your partner about something so silly, and then, you know, you going into, you know, overload with other areas, and it's like, hang on, what a privilege, you know, what an amazing feeling that we get to do this. And yeah, I think it's one of those moments where, yes, you want more, but look at what you've got now. And so I think it's just a reminder for everyone too, you know, intention, awareness, and maybe making some time in your day to do it too.
Yeah.
Which I haven't done yet.
So. Don't worry, it's still something that I'm trying to juggle myself, because I was actually speaking to my mate about this the other day as well, and we're talking about, to be able to grow something, you need time to stop and think, so you can actually create thoughts outside of what you're already doing. Maybe it's thoughts around growth and exposure. Maybe it's thoughts around, maybe you can change or tweak this. There can be so many different things, but I find when you're so in the thick of it, it's hard to pull yourself out and zoom out and see it from a different lens. So actually dedicating time to give yourself the opportunity to stand out, to be able to look back in, I think is so refreshing.
100%. And compared to last year too, I think we were in the thick of it because it was such a stressful time for us. You know, went through a dip, which for us has never happened. Mm. And so we were feeling like almost from December last year, we were in this sort of like hamster wheel scrambling. So when it came to yesterday and actually being like, wow, we can actually just breathe and not feel like we have to speed things up or, you know, stress things out. Yeah. And so that's been really cool to kind of go, this gets to be normal. Yeah. This gets to be something that we can now really appreciate. Mm. I agree with you.
And experiencing a dip, I know a lot of the time...
So many dips. Which one?
Let's just generalize. Because even myself, like I think about in my life when I've experienced dips, but then also finding the determination, the resilience, and, you know, overcoming limiting beliefs that may distract you in terms of making you go even deeper in the dip. But how do you guess... pull yourself out of the dip so you can make sure that you get back on track and that you don't stay down?
Yeah, it's funny because like I think because of everything I've been through, there's always been like a like there's no turning back, you know. You've been here before. Yeah. I'm sure all of us can remember those rock bottom moments, but it's almost like you build a threshold of, you know, okay, this is happening right now. And for people that feel like they're in the thick of things, it's honestly really being able to process it and be like, what is this teaching me? What's the solution? You know, sometimes it's easy for us to go, fuck this. What? There's another season.
Chuck it all out.
So, yeah, I think it's almost become second nature for us in terms of like just making sure that it doesn't become our narrative. But I definitely feel like you definitely need to have the right support people, you know, the people that you can soundboard with so that, you know, you're not going crazy, but it's just knowing that everything happens for a reason. And if we've been here before, it's like, we know we can get out of it too.
Yeah. And I think that's massive. And I think also with like the stories that we tell ourselves, because I find with me, a lot of the things that helps me get out of those depths or to get out of those dips and get back on course is the story that I tell myself. And it's that I reflect on the trials and tribulations in life that I've overcome.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I can overcome that, like what's stopping me from doing this? You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
You can really pull strength from a lot of the pain that you've had in the past. And I think that's probably a bit off topic, a bit of a tangent, but
no, it's I like love this.
You can pull purpose from pain in your life as well. And reflect back on certain points and think, well, I survived that, I made it through that, I overcame this, look what I achieved despite this pulling me back. Why can't I do this thing in front of me now?
Exactly. And I think the purpose thing is really beautiful. I always like to say this is one day going to be a really good fucking story. And it always is. And again, when people have been through that, the thick of things like yourself, you know, you know exactly that you've been able to triumph out of it, you know. And things like, for example, very simple, just recently we did like an interview on the streets and I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm too scared. I don't want to, you know, get people to say no. And I'm like, hang on, I've been through worse in life. What's the worst that can happen for someone going, I don't feel comfortable to be interviewed on the street? So yeah, it's perspective. It's, you know, the things we say to ourselves, what we've been through and going, you know what, it is what it is.
Yeah. What's that drive within you to put yourself out there? Because it's like,
say that again.
What's the drive within you to put yourself out there to do things like that? You know, because public speaking and also speaking in front of camera are probably the two most fearful things in the world, and you're going out there combining them both.
I was saying that to someone the other day. I'm like, I chose this life, one of the hardest things to do. But, you know, I think it's because my mum, you know, at 8 years old, you know, one of my school teachers, I was born in Germany, so we moved to Australia. My mum's from Brazil. And, you know, she couldn't speak English very well. You know, she could speak German and Portuguese. So I remember one of my English teachers said to my mum, you know, she's got so much ambition, she's very loud, but I couldn't read or write. So she, you know, my mum put me into a speech and drama school. And it's only something I've realised now that because of my mum making that decision to take the courage of, you know, helping me in that moment, you know, we didn't have money, you know, she was an Avon lady. And it was one of those moments that I look back now as to everything that I've been doing over the last, 20 years from all the different identities, it was because of my mum that put me into that space that made me realise that my voice has always been something that has been my strongest asset. And I didn't realise that speaking was something that I loved to do until someone said to me, you know, what is it that you want to be known for? And it was one of those moments, that dip I was telling you about, that I was like, what am I meant to be doing with my business? And she's like, you've always been on stage, maybe not the right stage.
I like that.
You know?
Yeah, that's good.
And it I get like goosebumps now because it was really that moment where I was like, I've always wanted to be a motivational speaker. And my mum used to play, you know, Tony Robbins, you know, like in the cassette moments when we had the radio. Wow. And it's funny, like, it's based on, it's always been within me. I just needed to listen, you know? So I chose something that maybe is quite scary to myself still, but it allows us to really change the world. And my biggest thing was always, I always wanted to help people. And it's so cliche because everyone says that, you know, I want to help people, but it's like, I've always wanted that. But I just felt like every path I chose, it was helping them to an extent, but not to my fullest potential. And that was probably my biggest driving force, that if people can have the awareness, the opportunity to use their voice, whether it's on stage, online, you know, in a podcast, how amazing would it be for us to have more impact in the world so that we can help more people? And so, yeah, I think that's my biggest driving force. And also my mum, because she's been my biggest why. And I guess giving my future family the life I never had.
Yeah. Talking about your mum, like growing up and especially till this day and now, when you look at your mother or when you think of your mum, what's some of the things you admire most about her?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is she is a storyteller.
Yeah.
Now we think maybe sometimes she makes stories up, but she's just got a beautiful, honestly, a beautiful nature. She's really good with people. And I just think for a really long time, I didn't know who I got my work ethic from, because I thought, you know, I'm half German, half Brazilian, like that's some fucking crazy mix. And I thought it was my dad, but he was never really around. So I believe my mum, without me realizing it until recently, was the one that made me really believe in myself. So she's just someone that would do anything for anyone. She's also someone that has been through a lot. She's got a lot of, you know, beautiful family members that don't agree with her sharing her message, her story too. And I think, you know, she's that type of woman that a lot of people misunderstand. She's got a very strong accent. She gets away with things. But yeah, her nature and her way of living now, you know, she's just someone that will always believe in you and will do whatever she can to help you get there. And that's what she did for me. And yeah, like she used to sew costumes when I went to ballet, you know, to pay for it. You know, she used to feed the neighbor's cat for me to go to speech and drama school. So I think she's a true hustler.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think she was what really, made me really persevere with everything.
Inspiration, the true sensei.
Really is. And sadly, like at the moment, I feel like she's coming out of that sense of, like, I think she's been lost for a really long time. I think there was a moment there where she gave up on herself because of everything she's been through. And so she sees me growing, and I think it gives her that hope in herself again. And I just want to give back to her, you know, because she's, you know, she's sacrificed a lot.
Yeah. Because is your mother, did you say German or Brazilian?
Portuguese. Brazilian.
Yeah, Brazilian. Yeah, nice. So.
She's fiery. She's shorter than me too.
So what is your first language?
German.
German. So German, Portuguese and English.
Then English.
Yeah, wow. So.
So then, speaking at school, I went to 6 different schools as well.
Yeah.
So I think adapting to being a speaker when I've had, you know, the narrative of, you know, not speaking well, not reading, you know, going to 6 different schools, adapting, you know, It's a bit crazy.
Yeah, especially someone like yourself who does a lot of public speaking, because different cultures, different languages, we'll have different pronunciations of certain words. Like, we can say the same word, but we pronounce it or mean it in a different way.
Completely.
I guess, how have you juggled the 3 different languages so you can, not juggle, it's probably not the right word, but how have you combined all 3 to your stage presence and how you speak?
Yeah, it's so interesting you say that, because sometimes I feel like I make up words and I'm like, I still don't know how to pronounce certain things too. But I don't think it's about language. It's about how you can connect the room. And I think when people know their message and story, you know, all it is about, it's all about frameworks and being able to lead people from, you know, where you are at the beginning, you know, and creating a curiosity gap to being able to loop it and close it at the end. You know, people want to be moved when they hear your story. And so navigating like the 3 different languages, I think when I was more older, like when I say older, adolescent, I think that's when I started to feel like I was still, I think, self-conscious a little bit about, and then, you know, you're changing different identities and different industries. I think for a really long time, I felt like I had to put on a different voice. I had to sound professional. I had to really articulate my words, you know, like it's just, I thought that in order to look professional, be successful, you know, I had to make people think that I was really smart.
Yeah.
You know, because of my limiting belief on it being my third language.
Yeah. So was the solution to that, was the end result of it identifying authenticity is the key to it? Because I know you talk a lot about authenticity, and it's something that I resonate with a lot, because I used to be the same, especially with showing up on social media and doing events and things like that. I thought I had to be a certain persona to be able to, I guess, share my story or highlight certain parts of myself. But I realized when I'm my most raw self, that's when I actually connect with people. My message actually hits the most.
100%. And I think that's where people are afraid to tap into, you know. And even for myself, when it was being online for the very first time, you know, you pull out your stories and you're like, I'm just going for a walk, everything's amazing. Meanwhile, my house exploded, life's chaotic. And it comes back to self-acceptance. And I think for a very long time, and still something I'm working on, I'm always really transparent about it, is accepting who I am. Like everything that you see, you know, in this proximity, and everything I am when you don't see me behind closed doors. And I think there was a lot of like this tug of war of self-punishment on myself when, you know, I would want to be a leader to people, but then behind closed doors, you know, I was afraid people would judge me and shame me for being a little bit different, a little bit quirky, you know, loving a glass of red wine here and there, you know, having fun and, you know, not being as serious, you know. But
a lot of times we can be too serious online, then we don't really connect with anyone. At the end of the day, it's just another piece of content that's just someone scrolls by. But if we actually want to connect with people and make an impact, then we've got to show more sides of ourselves, I found.
I agree. And I think, as you spoke about so beautifully, the vulnerability things, you know, it's interesting how so many people are afraid to be vulnerable online now. And it's almost the greatest asset to being relatable to people. You know, they want to see your humanness. I don't even know if that's a word. There you go. Just make one up. And, you know, knowing that you've been through stuff, knowing that you're not always perfectly put together, or you're not, you know, always the highlight reel. And one of the darkest times of my life was the biggest shift when I spoke from stage in a space that wasn't projecting or victimhood, or, you know, it was more from a place of like, I've been through this. I want more people to know what you can experience when you can actually tap into that authenticity and your voice to stand out, you know.
Because when you speak on stage and also on social media, what is the one or many parts of your story that really inspire people?
Yeah, such a good question. There's so many. I think it's the transition in business, you know, from the fitness space, an athlete, you know, even before that, being a professional dancer, actor. There was so many pivotal moments in those stories too, because I share a lot of like the insecurities I had in the dance space. You know, I used to always chase a certain look and feel, you know, being someone from a physique that, you know, you were told to look skinny and, you know, you had to perform, and it was all based on, you know, how you looked, how good you were when it came to dancing. And then when it came to fitness, you know, it was still the intention to do good. But I think that made me be focusing more on the validation of what my physique did, rather than, you know, helping people in the presence of health, like actual health. And I think too, when it came to the stories when I share about transitioning from that identity, it was all about the fear of judgment that I know a lot of people navigate through when it comes to being online. And I guess as well, you know, one of my biggest stories, and it's always something I come back to, it's being homeless at 12. I think you spoke before about that dip, you know, that rock bottom. That's probably where everything started for me. And one, because as I said before, I never want my family to go through what I did. That feeling of not being able to have a home and being locked out, all your furniture removed. It really does set almost like a thing when you're at 12, like, how do I grow up from this, you know? So that's probably the biggest one, because I always come back to that moment of, if I've been through that, I can do anything.
Do you mind if we talk about that experience? And the reason is because, like, I did youth work for 7 years. And when I mentioned the people around, you know, I've seen young people as young as 10, 11, 12 homeless living on the street or going to a shelter. Like, a lot of people were shocked that's even like something that can even happen in today's world. But from your own experience, do you mind sharing a bit about that journey, maybe the impact that had on you at that time, and I guess the lessons you took from it?
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you wanting to talk about this. The hardest thing I remember was when it happened, you know, we were coming home from school. It was my brother, it was my mum, and my best friend at the time. And just to give you guys context, my dad was, you know, always in and out of job. He was a gambling addict. So he was very good at making money fast and losing it.
Yeah.
So when we were walking into the room, sorry, walking into the house and we wanted to open the front door, we couldn't get in. The moment of knowing that we didn't have a home, we literally lived on the like in a caravan park. The church, if the church didn't help us, you know, we'd be like, I think for the one day we were like, we didn't have a home. The sad thing is though, because when I was 12 to about when I was 15, you know, I lived with my boyfriend at the time. My brother was in and out of shelter homes more than me with my dad. And I speak about that a lot because that one moment where we're living in a caravan park with nowhere to go was pretty big. But he experienced homeless shelter after homeless shelter after homeless shelter from, I think, the ages of 15 to 18, but he'd still go to school, you know, and somehow my dad would somehow find, you know, money to, for him to have tuition or things like that. And even just other areas of like memories, you know, my dad would steal from like grocery stores, you know, and he would sell my brother's instruments because he was a film composer. And that for me, watching him go through that was harder than what I went through. And I think security and safety at a young age is so important. And I think we didn't have that the whole time we were growing up. And so I always looked to like, you know, be with friends or live with friends. I was that kind of kid that, you know, from the outside in, you wouldn't know that was happening. And I guess behind closed doors or experiencing, you know, not having anything, like not having a bed, you know, having the church look after you, donate, which we're really grateful for. Something that really makes me grateful for what we have now is cherishing moments like Christmas and things like that, because we didn't have that really growing up. So he went through it more down the addictive path with alcohol, but he's come out of it now. And I guess for us, you know, there's other traits that my father has that I haven't really shared much online, you know, but it's been one of the biggest and hardest things to experience, but my greatest gift at the same time too. And yeah, I can only imagine people being, you know, like working with youth kids. Was that youth kids?
Yeah. I worked with young people ages like 8 to 21 in the community.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because the reason I want to touch about on this, if you're happy to, is like, what was a belief or a story that really helped you along those years? Because some of the young people may be watching this that I've worked with, or just young people in general, or maybe information I can share to people for inspiration. But what's something that really helped you along that time, whether it was a belief, whether it's someone else who helped you, whether it was a story you told yourself, was it something that you really latched onto that helped you get through that time?
I was a big writer. I was a big writer. I used to write poems when I was a kid growing up. So I was almost very imaginative when it came to what I wanted to experience and have. So when all those moments of time, even like out of the caravan park, when we finally were able to have a really shacky home, I remember it. I don't even know how we got it, to be fair. It was writing. It was writing. It was having, I guess, I never really had anyone that I remember that helped me that was a role model then. Like, I can't even think of anyone right now. So I think I really turned to, you know, being able to write how I was feeling and expressing and writing poems. And that time too, I was still doing a lot of dancing. So for me, it was finding something that I could escape from, essentially, which is not the right thing to say, or it's, for me, it was the thing that helped me, but it was really having that element of expression when I couldn't talk to anyone about it. It was so embarrassing for my mum. And my father was very much the opposite. He would want people to think of him as the one that had everything together. And so for us, it was like the only way I could express was through movement, was through writing. And obviously when I used to listen to the cassettes of like musicals and, you know, seeing people on stage or even like Tony Robbins, you know, my mum used to play that in the car. That was what was helping me get through things. So I guess role models were not someone that I knew in my proximity, but it was people that I could see on stage. Eric Thomas was one of them too. You know, that one video that is so old, which he said, if you want success as much as you can breathe, then you can be successful, or then you will be successful. And that was just something that I would just play over and over again. But beliefs and in terms of perseverance, I think I've just always had that I never want to go through that again, mm-hmm. that it made me really decide and choose what I did want.
Yep.
And even though like I've gone through all the different journeys to get there, you know, for the young kids listening, you know, I think it's so important to have a community.
Yep.
I didn't have one, you know, I didn't have one growing up, and I went through so many different schools that when people found out that I was the poor kid, you'd be made fun of.
Yeah.
So having what you do, a community, a voice, you know, having someone that you can have a connection with to be yourself, to feel safe, is probably the biggest thing that I wish I had.
Yeah.
That I would give the advice to the kids right now.
I love that, because you answered my question before I asked it. Because I was going to say, what's a piece of advice or word you would say to your younger self, or maybe someone experiencing that similar situation?
I think I would say, I'm proud of you, because for a very long time, you know, I was chasing my father's approval too, you know, in terms of if I wasn't number one in dance recitals, you know, I'd feel like I was not worthy.
Yeah.
But to speak to my younger self is, I'm proud of you. Because now one of my biggest things is whenever I see my clients, you know, achieving something, I'm like, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people hear that. And maybe we don't, you know, as we spoke about self-reflection, we don't actually reflect on, you know, being grateful for who we are.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely bad for that.
Yeah. Like, I'm proud of you. No, I've got to do more. Yep. So, yeah, I think, you know, saying to her, like, I'm proud of you. I see you.
And that version of yourself as well, for young people experiencing that thing, like, they're so strong and resilient. Like, I look at some of the young people that I've worked with in similar situations, and I'm like, sometimes you guys inspire me. Like, with everything that you guys have got going on, no matter what, you're still trying to find a way to make it work. Like, still trying to find a way to go to school or find a job. Even though your family life is in crisis, you've got no housing.
Yeah.
All this stuff is going on, but you're still trying to find a way to make your life happen.
It's so
true.
You know,
like, that's so inspirational.
So true, yeah. And I can only imagine how rewarding it is for you, because they're young kids. They just want to have fun. They want to be kids.
Be kids,
you know what I mean? And I think that was something, recognizing my upbringing too. I was like, I think I had to grow up really fast as well.
Yeah.
So I think when they go to school, they just want to be around their friends and, you know, I guess, you know, be able to have those moments of having fun and having something to live for.
Yeah, because it's weird, because even me, when I was like 14, I felt like I had to be like 25.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I felt like I had to be a lot older than I was, just to kind of get through those times that I was trying to get through, because I don't even know too much about my story, but I became a drug addict when I was 11.
Really?
And I got clean when I was 18.
Wow. That's 7 years?
7 years, yeah, of drug addiction. And those 7 years were chaotic, but I found that I had to kind of mature early to get myself clean at 18 and trying to start build a life for myself. But when I reflect back on myself, when I speak to other young people, and it sounds the same with your journey as well, like, that version of you was so strong, you know, that version of me was so strong. And when we experience those dips in life, we can actually pull strength out of our inner child sometimes, you know?
It's true. It's so true. And what was your moment for when you decided to go, I need a change?
It was a build up of things. I think the first one was I got back from schoolies, as most people do.
Was that up here?
Back in 2014, and I looked in the mirror, and schoolies, I didn't really sleep the whole week. I was taking like 10 pills a day mixed with other drugs and alcohol. And I remember getting back, and I was super thin. Like, I've got a photo I can show you after the podcast of that talk when I got back from schoolies. I was like this thin, unhealthy. I was getting like these really bad head twitches. So I would just sit down, my head would just like twitch and move and jolt. And I just knew I was unhealthy, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm rather going to overdose one day, going to get myself in trouble with the law, or I may potentially, you know, unfortunately, may one day, you know, commit suicide or take my own life. And I was like, none of those three paths kind of suit me of what I want to do moving forward. And then from there on, I was like, all right, how can I actually beat addiction? How can I get out of this? How can I even start building a life for myself? Because at that point, you know, I got expelled from school, had nothing going for me, no job. And then from there, I was just trying to find building blocks. But that moment was kind of when I got back from schoolies and looked in the mirror, and I'm like, wait, there's actually something wrong here.
Makes me really emotional hearing that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And I think it's I'm always like, what was the strategy? How did you? It's funny, you just made a decision, and then and from there you just had a really greater purpose.
Yeah, that's it. And it's finding a way to turn your pain into purpose as well, because instead of becoming the victim of my story and the challenge that I've been through, instead source some purpose from it and power. It's like, yeah, what I went through was shit and it wasn't good. It's like, how can I use this to inspire someone else? You know, like someone that's been through what I've been through, how can I help them? Or maybe there's a certain lesson or key moment that helped me that can help someone that's even older than me, you know? Like, there's so many different lessons. And
it's true.
Did you have to do this with your own story? Like, find the way to drift emotion away from it so you can actually observe it in a like a more brighter light rather than every time you look back, it's dark.
Yeah, and it's interesting because like for a really long time I thought I wasn't in victimhood at one point, but I realized when I was reactive and, you know, even still resentful to my mom, you know, and other things, I was like, hang on, I'm still like blaming my past even though I have this like resilience. So it was an interesting journey just having that, the way the story was shared to it then being, I've been through that, I've processed it, but it's not my only narrative. It's more so the theme of what people can achieve regardless if you've been homeless or not, or regardless if you had addiction or not. You know, we've all had our own rock bottom moments.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting time of when I thought I was not in victimhood to then being like, yeah, okay, you know, I can leverage this, I can use this, I can share this, I can help people with this. But I had to also do a lot of healing and still do, you know. So many new things come up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to bookmark that. That came up for a reason. The biggest thing I think for me that I knew something needed to change was when I had a new partner that loved me unconditionally.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? You're not abandoning me? And that was the biggest turning point for me to go, there's more here I need to do on myself.
Because before we get a bit further down the road, I want to come back because you asked me about how did I get out of that situation. I want to ask the question back to you as well. Like for those teenage years, experience homelessness, you know, but you're still doing poems and you're getting into dance and you're still trying to live your life as well. I guess, what was a moment that you started to think, well, things are starting to get better, or maybe there's, you start seeing the light, or if you know what I mean? Like, when was, I guess, a stage of your life where you think the tables were turned?
I think for me, it was when I made a really big decision on, I wanted to get into the entertainment space as a as an actor, because I think I found something that I loved so much as a career, and I'm a very career-driven woman. And I think it was when I got into a scholarship at McDonald College, and I was happy there. I was happy there, and I never had my parents come to any parent-teacher interview. I never had anyone say, you need to have these grades. But when I was able to be accepted into something that I was recognized for being good, I was like, okay, I have a gift here. I want to see what I can do with it, you know? And coming back to then those little moments of people kind of giving me those nudges as well, you know, I think there were teachers and, you know, there were definitely like my acting teachers that saw something in me. And I think now really looking at it, there was just a great knowing that I needed to keep going with that. And whether that someone needs to find that one thing or having something that they believe in themselves, because for a really long time there, I was like, I have no idea what the hell I want to do, because everyone was in this academic space. I was always the creative, crazy, hyperactive kid that didn't stand still. So that was, for me, I think, the biggest turning point. And then going into that sort of industry and all the other stuff as well, that really got me out of, really got me out of that that slump.
Do you ever find with acting or reading a script or playing a role that you saw something within a role or read something in a script and it taught you something about your own life?
Absolutely. I knew you were going to ask me this, because I was like, and I was thinking, oh my goodness, when I had to do method acting. And that was another big thing that I realized, that when we did a lot of method acting, you had to go down and tap into some deep emotions, and sometimes I couldn't control it. And that was something that started to become more and more aware, because for so long I was just pushing everything down, as everyone would know. And it was just coming out more and more and more. So that was a big thing for me to realize, and it kept happening in other circumstances too, to the point where I was like, something needs to be done.
Because, I always get curious around that, because I interviewed an actress maybe about a year ago as well, and she was mentioning the parallels between the two, and you actually can find yourself through playing roles and playing scripts, because it makes you reflect on yourself and like, how does this character connect to me?
It's funny, because I watch movies now, and I'm such a movie fanatic, and I get so emotional, and I'm like, wow, this is something here that I'm learning about myself that I really love seeing, you know, movies about family. I didn't have a big family, you know. I love seeing the inspirational Top Gun movie. I'm just like a massive Marvel nerd. I love what movies can make people feel. I love what acting can make you feel too. I can also, yeah, self-discover things that you were like, wow, that's an interesting thing that just came up there, yeah. You know?
Is that a space you want to step back into?
It's funny you say that. I think for me, it's definitely more the speaking route.
Yeah.
But I think the acting taught me so much to memorize poems, to write monologues, I was on the debating team, all these very nerdy things. I'm a very, very nerdy theater nerd. But yeah, I think it has given me so many skill set that I can use now that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Like people say, you've got a really good memory. I mean, I lose my keys everywhere. But little things that I've not realized I can actually memorize so much. And yeah, I think for me, I've put those things down. I think for me, it's something bigger.
Yeah. Talking about debating team, I know it's a bit random, but...
I wasn't good. I was really bad.
But do you think that really helped you with, like, stage presence or talking or dealing with, like... Cause I can imagine if you're debating someone and they say something, it's like, oh, shit moment. Like, how am I going to respond to this?
100%.
Did that serve you in terms of what you do now?
Absolutely. It's funny. So many things did, you know, like improvisation, miming, debating. And it's one of those things, like, you have to be fast in acting and skills. When they give you, you have to do this one thing. You're like, okay, cool. But, yeah, I think I was only 12 years old, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think... so many things now I'm so grateful I was able to learn so young because, you know, even when you think about thinking on the spot when you just share a story online and you don't want to be, I don't like scripts, by the way. I don't like them anymore, but it's definitely something that if people can have a blend of those elements or traits, or if people are looking at upskilling in areas, like speaking is probably the best thing you can start really getting better at.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
And yeah, the debating team, gosh, we didn't win though, so I don't know if that helps. But there's so many things that I was doing there that maybe kids don't do now anymore. I don't know. Do you reckon, like, is that still popular?
No, because like
if it was
over the last 5 years, like I've been to a lot of schools and I don't really see debating, and yeah, I don't really see many of that anymore, to be honest. Yeah,
I'm so cool, I'm reflecting guys. On it.
But I think that would be good because I remember when I was in school, I was doing drama. It was like my favorite class.
Did you love drama?
Yeah, because I'm a kinesthetic learner, so I land on hands-on stuff.
You're my person. Yeah. Yes.
So like woodwork, metalwork, drama, like anything that was just movement. If I had to sit down and get a pen, the pad, and write, like I would just 10 minutes and I'm done. Like my brain's fried. But yeah, I'm very much a kinesthetic learner.
Yeah, so am I. It's good. And how often did you do drama?
Well, it was once a week at school, but it wasn't something that I really took too serious. It's just more so I just enjoy going to that class the most. I wouldn't wag it. So
I get it. You're like, I don't want to do fucking math.
Yeah, like, I'll do drama.
Yeah, I think that's really good for kids.
Yeah, I agree. Actually,
creative, you know, like movement, drama. Like, I think that was probably a big thing for me. If kids are getting into that too.
Yeah, and I think it's finding ways to, I guess, bring the best out of each student, because some students may work best in the setting of sitting down and reading the book. Some work best in movement and drama and poems and woodwork and the physical type of stuff, you know, and it's finding ways to, I guess, enhance people's greatness. Do you find that's what you do with your work? Like when you get a client on board, you're finding ways to enhance their greatness, or is it a balance of enhancing that, but also working on the other stuff that they could probably
improve on. I think it's amplifying their greatness.
Yeah.
You know, something that people don't realize, it's always there, and it's like you pull them out, you're like, okay, there's something here. And it's finding sometimes they don't realize how simple to have a really incredible skill that they can teach, you know, a message, or, you know, building an offer, or you becoming the offer, you know. And I think that's what I love about when people want to build brands, it's me getting to know them, you know, all of their, you know, quirkiness, attributes, you know, their stories, their upbringings, you know, what are they really passionate about, what do they stand for, and it's like putting the pieces together. I was actually thinking about this in the car, I'm like, how does my brain work when people come, and it's like you kind of like, it's like a spider web, and you're just like, and then you start to piece it all together, but then there's a strategy behind all of that. And it's really beautiful because I think people overthink how they should have a personal brand, or how to kind of, you know, amplify their message and voice. It's just you times 20.
Yeah, legit.
You know?
Yeah, I was the same as well, because I'm building a personal brand now, and beforehand I was overcomplicating this so much. And it's like, just show up on the camera and be you, you know, and share wisdom, share your life, the ups and the downs, and be yourself. But beforehand, I think a lot of the times we can try and over perfect things to the point where we kind of rather procrastinate on it and it never happens. Or secondly, we start to pursue it, but it doesn't actually align with what we actually want it to look like.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, because if you think about, you know, building a business plan, it's the foundations of that. Mm. The same with branding, you know, your values of what you believe in can also then dictate the rules and decisions you make as a brand. Yeah. And so I think even when I look back at some of the decisions I've made with a brand, it's like, oh, that was someone else's brand. That's not my voice, that's their voice. Mm. So it's kind of like...
That's an interesting concept, because you hear a lot that we adopt other people's beliefs, but we can also adopt other people's brands and how they show up, you know, and then we show up as someone else and it's like, wait, that doesn't feel like me.
Exactly. Yeah, well. Exactly. And it's so common, and I've done it in the fitness space. Even when I veered into life coaching, I'm like, I'm going to wear a suit and wear all this stuff and look like I know what I'm talking about. And, you know, it's just really kind of dissolving yourself. It's a disservice to you, you know, if you're being someone that doesn't represent who you are.
Yeah.
And then you're attracting unaligned people to your space, to your audience. So, yeah, there's so many beautiful parts to the brands. I get so geeky about it.
Did you ever have a moment in your life where you thought, who am I? And you have to try and identify that? Because talking about personal branding and embracing who we are, to an extent, we have to know who we actually are to begin with.
I think it was when I decided not to become... I just wanted to not be in the fitness space anymore.
Yeah.
That was really big for me, because I always identified myself as someone who had achieved something, but then it's like, remove all the trophies, remove, you know, all your rewards. Who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
It's like, and that was big, because I felt like I was kind of almost dying in a way and going into something that was almost like a transition into someone that was always there. But I think when I decided to be in the fitness space, it came from a good place.
Yeah.
But again, it was based on, my friend's doing fitness, I'm going to do fitness.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I think that was a big turning point for me. And that's kind of when I stepped into the personal development space, and you're learning about yourself. That was fucked. During COVID, single and alone in an apartment with my two cats. They're beautiful, by the way. And, wow, yeah, that was an interesting journey, because you're like, I didn't realize all of this stuff that I was masking. And, you know, it's the good stuff, the bad stuff that make you who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I had a similar moment in COVID as well. I feel like that was probably the best thing about the big C, was that actually gave us a moment.
It's always a COVID.
Yeah, the big C. But it gave us a moment to like actually reflect and look back on our lives, you know, and kind of reassess where we're at and who we are, and use that as an opportunity to look forward, I found.
I agree. Like
actually giving yourself, or kind of being forced to have moments of stillness.
I think so too. I think that was a really big wake-up call for a lot of people. I remember speaking to one of my best friends at the time during COVID. Can I say that word? C word.
Yeah, go for it.
No, I'm like, is there a rule here? I've just been swearing this whole podcast. And she's like, people are going to use this time to use it as an excuse to not, when I say not do anything, but looking at it a way of like, what can you learn about yourself, work on yourself, you know, in this time frame.
Yeah.
For me, it was healing. It was, you know, being ahead of, if the world is shutting down and being quiet and people are like, well, I'm just going to get on the dole and not do anything. It's like, what do I get to do with this time to really learn about myself? Whether it's to slow down, be present, whether it's to excel, upskill, whether it's to heal and all of the fun stuff. But yeah, it was definitely a time I never go back and go, fuck, I wish I never went through that.
Yeah. Agreed. Because that was actually the first ever time I started to even do breath work and meditation. Because beforehand, like, I would only go to the gym.
Yeah.
Like, that was my only method. I'm like, this is the only thing that can help people. And I started doing breath work and meditation and learn other skills that can really, you know, help with anxiety and help with mood, or help with energy levels, wherever it's going up or coming down. And I was like, wait, there's actually more to life than just going to the gym and lifting weights.
I literally went through this too. I was like, I'm healed now, off my medication, look at my body. And then, yeah, breath work and meditation was a big learning part for me too. I remember reading Dr. Joe Dispenza's book. I went through a rabbit hole of like reading and stuff as well. And just his way of explaining, you know, meditation, you know, in his book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, was probably the book that changed my life.
Yeah, well.
And that's when I was getting really heavily into like the nerdiness of his way of like meditation and the brain waves and stuff like that. I believe personally my go-to is breath work, because it's something that I really love about self-regulation, the science behind it. But yeah, like I remember when I guess there was more to than just going to the gym.
Yeah.
That can actually make your journey of like really working on yourself to change.
Yeah, and just having like different tools that you can access, because I'm the same. I prefer prefer breath work, but sometimes I do meditation. But it was a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Talks about the idea of meditation isn't sitting down and cancelling thoughts. It's more of an observation of the thoughts.
Mm.
And the way he explains in the book is that you sit down on a chair like this, and all your thoughts are on the movie screen.
Yeah,
don't tell them to go or leave. Just let them be and watch them and observe. And I think that also helped me detach emotion from negative intrusive thoughts as well. So if a negative intrusive thought did come in, I was able to actually not even connect a unhelpful emotion to it. Instead, yeah. I could just observe what it was and let it pass.
Such a beautiful thing to say.
Yeah.
I think people don't want to tap into their emotions and, yeah. and explore what that looks like. But to have that there for you just to go, this is what's coming up.
Mm.
And to have, was it more like a neutral feeling to it? Or
yeah, it's more like a neutral, just like, kind of like it was on a movie, you know, just like observing it for what it was. Yeah.
That's cool.
And detaching the emotion away from it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And do you still do meditation now?
Yeah, probably not as often. It's probably like a fortnight thing.
Yeah.
But breath work is something that I'd say I do daily.
That's good.
Whether it's just like 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, the simple stuff, not like the full deep Wim Hof stuff every day.
I agree. I feel like that's why I like it, because you can have 5 minutes of... that's enough. But no, I agree. It's definitely something for us for daily as well. It's 5 minutes that I love using it. It's also something that helps me for stage.
Yeah.
Mm.
How so?
I'm such a high energy person. Yeah. So when I think of going on stage, if I'm more too high, I'm in my head.
Yeah.
So for me, breath work is honestly like my anchor. There's music too. And I find when I'm grounded, I'm more open in my heart.
Mm.
And I can sort of really choose the level of frequency that I want to project my tonality, my voice.
Mm.
And you can still be really, you can take up so much space, even if you're not as...
Yeah.
Because I can be like this too.
Yeah.
And that's probably been the biggest shift for me too, because it's just a simple thing for me that's changed the way I then present, even when my whole world is falling apart.
Yeah.
And that's been massive.
Yeah, it is massive, because I'm the same. Like if I'm too high energy, like I'm my brain's fried, I'm scattered, like I can talk, but it's not going to connect. You know what I mean? But a lot more calmer you are, I feel like things can come to you a lot easier as well.
Agreed. It's almost like, isn't it more like people that are quite up, they need more the...
Yeah. The down, yeah.
I know Chris knows all this stuff.
What's something that really helped in terms of communication? Because communication is a big thing, just being able to articulate your thoughts. Is there any like practices or anything that you've done that's really helped that?
Is this for speaking or in terms of business?
We'll go with speaking.
Yeah. How to communicate my thoughts. In terms of like how to communicate to the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think frameworks have been the biggest thing for me. So in terms of wanting to teach something, for example, I always believe that if you can break it down into a way that they can have an emotional connection to it as well. It's kind of like when I talk about marketing and messaging, you know, how to get it to be relatable to them, for them to have a feeling or an emotional connection. You know, it's really understanding what the goal is on what you're communicating first.
Yeah.
I feel like people overcomplicate it. It's like, where do I begin? You know, what's the starting point? How do I get my message across? How do I communicate to the audience? And we have a story progression that I love teaching, and it's, you know, the S stands for significance. You know, what's a three, you know, key significant events that have shaped you for who you are. The second is theme. So T for themes, you know, what are the themes of those significant events? And then there's the O, which is there's always an option of when you think about the one event with the theme, what was happening of the options you had to move away from the pain or move towards motivation.
Right.
And then it's the questions on relatability and results, what happened. And then it's tying it into your message. So in terms of communication to the audience, you know, you really need to know what the foundations are first of what you're delivering to them. And storytelling is so powerful to the audience that it's almost like you see, I guess, every section of your event or what maybe it's a keynote, you know, it's always starting with something that's powerful. We had a really cool framework on different types of archetypes for speakers.
Yep.
And that's where, you know, you decide on how you begin your presentation. And sometimes when you want to communicate something and you're not sure on where to begin, there's four ones that we've taught. And the first one that I really love is the truth teller. Because if you're someone that doesn't know how to begin or is new to speaking and you've got an audience and you want to communicate something, start with the truth.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm feeling really nervous today. And then it gets them on your level.
Yeah, it brings everyone together.
Exactly. So there's different ways of kind of communicating. It's knowing your archetype as a keynote. You know, the beginning is always that what sets the tone. Knowing it's always about them too.
Yeah.
I always feel like if you make it about you, the first thing they care about is about them.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, they're judging you. So, you know, if you can humanize the experience, or if your communication is to build authority, you know, you can communicate something simply by just raising your hand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like what you see now at the moment with a lot of comedians doing crowd work. Because at like the start of the show, they make the show about the crowd before they make it about their act.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the invitation. You know, you're setting them to commit to them to themselves, to being there for you on the day. I love it, because I think if people get to just understand these little elements to it, it becomes a really beautiful flow too. And then there's different ways of like how you speak, what the framework is, you know, what's the hook, what's the heart, what's the hurdle, what's their hope, what's your last little handover. I'm just sharing my frameworks.
No, it's good. I'm learning a lot.
I love myself. It's amazing. We had a 3-day speaker sprint. I was so nervous. I haven't taught a speaker event for 3 days. And I had a 6-pillar framework on building a keynote. And by the end of the 3 days, everyone walked away with a keynote, but they all spoke without a script.
Well.
And they presented, they didn't even present, they were themselves,
right.
But they just had this beautiful element in their journey, and it was just those 6 pillars, the 6 H's.
Wow.
So yeah, it was really cool.
That must be a cool thing to witness, like seeing the work that you've put in behind the scenes and then seeing the evidence of it working with so many different people.
You know what's funny? You said before, do you reflect on things? That was a big one for me. I was so emotional because I was like, I didn't realize it was going to work. I know it's so silly to sound, but it's to say, but it's when people are like, you're really good at this. It was almost like, I didn't do anything. It's all you guys. And that time was something that came and a bit of a journey with me and my partner. We just found out I have to have surgery for endometriosis. So when I was doing the 3-day speaker sprint, I was in a lot of pain. And we have to obviously pitch at the event too. And rather than it being like a selling, you know, process, I just spoke from the heart. And to hear the people that came to this event, like there's amazing people that have established businesses and they still don't know how to show up online or speak, and they've got like these amazing businesses. And so for me to be 36 years old, a room full of women who are like 50 plus to say that, I was like, it's insane. But I think it's belief. I think they need someone to believe in them.
Yeah, I think that's it. Someone's given permission to believe in themselves.
Yeah.
Someone to have their back as well. And also the community that you're bridging over 3 days to, I think, is a massive part of it.
Yeah.
But at the moment, you give me so many gems, because I'm thinking about, all right, because...
Sorry, that's me. My brain.
No, that's good. I like it. Because I've been planning like to run like ads for next year for our videography service. And I'm like, how am I going to tell the ad to be a story? But you kind of just gave me the whole framework for it.
It's the 6 H's. Yeah, exactly. Okay, do you want to go through it? It is, oh my God, I forgot the first one. The first one is heart.
Heart.
Hurdle.
Hurdle.
Hope.
Hope.
Wait, I think I've got it wrong now. Hang on. Heart, hope. No, heart, hook.
Hook.
Hurdle. Hope. Handover. And I'm missing one. Now I've forgotten what it was. It'll come back to me. Oh, how to.
How to.
So, heart, hook, hurdle. Hope, how to is your framework and what you teach, and the handover is basically how you finish it.
Right.
Well, that was awkward. Sorry, guys. I put my own framework.
That was good. Like, heart before hook, because everyone else says hook first.
Yeah.
How come it's heart before hook?
Hook can be, you can flip it depending on the archetype you want to do as well. So if your archetype is the truth teller, then that's already a hook.
Yeah, okay.
But if you want the story to be, excuse me, if you want your story to be the heart, your opening moment can be something that's, you know, a moment of your, you know, I hit rock bottom and I nearly died. I guess it's a hook. But yeah, I think you can definitely flip between the two.
So it's like a hook that's heart-led. Yeah, heart-led. I like that. I'm going to be doing that.
Yeah.
That's me, sword. Thanks.
You're welcome. I'll send you the framework.
That'll be awesome.
Because I fucked it up.
For someone like myself or anyone listening that has a, let's just say next week I've got a public speaking gig, is there any no-nos that you say to people, like certain things to avoid doing?
When it comes to not public speaking, I think it's not having the perception that you need to have everything perfect.
Mm.
You know, I think you don't need a script either. I think it's just really being able to know what your message is and your stories. Yeah. That is it.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, when you think of no-nos, it's not about not doing this and that. It's just not buying into the narrative or the perception of people have when it comes to public speaking. Mm. You know, like it shouldn't be something where you need to be doing like Toastmasters, you know. It gets to be something that can be really fun and experience,
mm.
you know. But if there was something else I could think of, I think be comfortable. Don't come into a speaking thing and you're wearing something that you feel incredibly tight and restricted. Postures is big too. I think posture and, you know, not being too caffeinated, you know, wearing something that makes you feel like you, your mm. brand.
Yeah.
And yeah, don't come drunk.
That's a good one.
Don't do a vodka shot before you speak. It fucks it up. Yeah.
Notes taken.
Yes.
No more drinking on stage. But
well, because people do that. Yeah. They go, I need it, you know.
Oh, yeah, true, because they just need to find a way to take the edge off. Yeah, because I couldn't imagine myself, like, drinking or even just coffee, because I feel like it would just get me too, like, I need something to kind of calm me and mellow me. Because yeah. the type of person I am, like, I need to be settled
yeah.
so I can get high pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I need to be grounded.
I'll have one coffee and then water for me and ginger tea is good.
Ginger tea, yeah.
I don't get hungry because yeah. I feel like as soon as I eat, my energy drops.
Yeah, especially, yeah, I think ginger tea really helps with you just keep going as well because I'm the same. I have ginger lemon tea.
Look at us.
And that just pushes me through.
Yeah, now at the end, you're like, I'm so hungry.
Yeah, I'm starving. But I've got two final questions for you. The first one is one I ask every guest.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define success?
Ooh, that's so good. How do I define success? Well, first and foremost, I used to think success was based on the results you've had.
Mm.
And personally, I think it's really about being able to be of service and of impact. And success to me is giving back to my family, giving back to my community, and just knowing that every day I'm showing up online or on stage, sharing my message. Mm. And I think it's not about the end goal of being successful. It's like every day you get to be successful. So it's more about what have I done today that gets me closer to being able to help the people that need to hear my voice, that need to hear my message. And success sometimes can look like if you've had a really bad day and you haven't, you know, been able to work towards your goals, what if you could then, you know, share a message to the people that need to hear something that gives them a shift in belief or a moment of just knowing that someone's there for them.
Mm.
So I think success is helping the people around you, knowing that it can be a daily thing. And yeah, showing up and using your voice to be of service and impact.
Mm, I love that. The last one's a bit more of a fun question, you mentioned that you're into acting.
Yes.
Who's your top five actors or actresses?
Okay, Robert Downey Jr., number one. Number two, I love Meryl Streep.
Mm.
Oh, five, that's hard. They're all Marvel characters. Chris Hemsworth. And I need females. Anne Hathaway. And I've got Scarlett Johansson. They're all fucking superhumans.
Yeah, no, they're good. Actually, I got one more. Top five movies as well. Do you have a top five movies?
Okay, yes. Avengers Endgame. P.S. I Love You. Harry Potter.
Mm.
Oof, two more. Titanic.
Yeah.
And Wolf of Wall Street.
Love it. That's a great movie.
Yes. So good. Because Leonardo's actually one of my top five. I'll change that. Take out Scarlett Johansson.
And put in Leonardo?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Put him in there. Fuck, I love him.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Tamara, I just want to say thank you for coming on the podcast. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate you sharing your story and all the wisdom as well. I know for myself, I've learned a lot. I'm sure the listeners have too. But once again, thank you.
No, thank you for having me. And thank you again for everything.